Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. You are in for a treat, just as I am. My brother Brian is not in the studio today. Instead, we've got Ag PhD research lead Glenn Hirsch. Glenn, what? How refreshing is this to have a different face?
You're going
to
get me in trouble. That's all you're trying to do.
Oh man, you know you kind of do the same show. The same host. You're working with just day after day after day. It's kind of nice to have a fresh face in here. And you know what? We're gonna challenge you and flex your knowledge a little bit today. So we're gonna talk about setting up fertility programs. I know this is something you get a lot of questions about, just because of all the different people you get to work with around the country.
Right. We even had a couple of meetings here this morning and stuff, and some of the guys you're talking to and guys are talking fertility and what they're going to do for this coming spring and whatnot with not getting the avail, you know, not being able to get out to the fields and how wet everything is and, you know, what route would you go, you know, fertility wise. And I'm like, if I could give me a couple months, you know, because we don't know what this thing's going to be like going in.
No.
This, you know, I mean, we could get a dry winter, turn nice and sunny in the spring, and who knows how much of this stuff's going to go away.
You're right. It could get a lot better, and hopefully it does. But let's just say it's kind of what everybody thinks, that, oh man, it's not perfect, and we're really pushed in the spring. I want you to talk just a little bit, Glenn. I know you've done a lot of work about fertility placement with not only in furrow, but two by two on each side of the row, strip till. What would you be doing if you had access to any equipment out there? What are a couple of your favorites going into this spring? Hey, if I was set up to do this, that's what I'd run with.
I think for me, and I that was part of what the gentleman that I was talking with this morning, we were talking a little bit about nitrogen placement, and he's done strip till in the past. Everything's dry. They've put some fertility or some nitrogen down with urea in a strip till scenario. The tough part about that is, you know, the weather, you know, while you're applying that can be a problem. If you got a lot of humidity, it just seems to gum things up, you know. So he wasn't going to do that this spring. And then he wanted to put more of his nitrogen on at that strip till time liquid wise. You know, so we were just trying to get it so that we would be safe around that seed.
That's a really interesting point that you brought up there. And I think this is one that we're going to get a lot of questions on going into next spring, is maybe I should put a little more on with my fertility program at planting time, because soil conditions are not great out there. And if we get a big rain, I might not get back in for my side dress.
Well, and that was his concern, is like, what if it stays wet into, midsummer again? Am I going to be able to get back in there? And I mean, that was a real thing that we had here. My main research stuff that I look here in Baltic, we've got tile underneath that ground, and we still were not able to get in there when we wanted to get the, you know, our trials on.
Tile kept the plants alive, but it didn't necessarily.
You still
got to
stay on top of it. Yeah, you know, so it made it tough. That's part of what we're going through. I guess that would be part of what I would like to do. I would, you know, and it gets. I mean, let's say we go out there and it's super wet. It'd be great to put a lot of the stuff on with the planter. But man, that planter gets pretty darn heavy if you've got all your nitrogen and everything and you're trying to go across that. Well, now I've compacted my ground.
Yeah, I don't
right
know about
there,
the, so. I don't know about the nitrogen. Now for me and what my plan is anyway, is I'm probably going to put some liquid nitrogen out with my herbicide program.
That's what I recommended there too, is like, get some of that out with that pre. For sure, don't forget about that pre. I mean, that's a big thing.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those interesting years. I know Brian and I have already talked about it a little bit, that a tentative plan for us is basically using the ProGerminate or SureK program in furrow, mm-hmm. or in a 2x2, whatever we're set up with there, and then looking at broadcasting in on with our pre-emerge herbicide. That way we can buzz across with the sprayer and not create too many issues and get all that nitrogen out of the way. And then if we're using a 10-gallon program with the planter, mm-hmm. it's at most not that much weight. We can make it work.
Right. And we've got some fields here, you know, I've where we can, you know, the CECs are heavy enough where we put it all up front. And so you get a pretty good dose of nitrogen out there with that pre. It's kind of a flamethrower. It does a real nice job if there's a little bit of small weeds that are coming up.
And there will be.
There always is. And it just seems like it helps pull that herbicide in a little bit, and we've had very good results doing that.
Yeah, I think the fertility program this year, if you just say, well, I'm just going to go on autopilot, I'm going to do the same thing I did last year, I don't think it's going to work. It wouldn't work for us, I know that. And it depends on where you're at. Some guys got a lot of their fall prep work done and seed bed prep work, but we certainly weren't one of those that got a lot of that done. We ended up having to make choices in the fall. And I remember one day we were talking about, all right, what are we going to do? We got like 10 things that we want to get done here. We want to do some strip tillage. We want to, you know, do this. We want to do that. And we got to do some tiling. Well, coming out of 2018, it was an easy answer. We got to get the tiling
done. Let's get the tile done. Right. Absolutely. So, and I think that's what guys are going to have. I mean, they're going to have to be flexible. You know, it's, you know, I'm sure some guys have got some stuff ordered for spring and whatnot and all that, but yeah, I mean, we're just going to have to be flexible and see what this thing's going to come out looking like.
Yep, I totally agree. I totally agree. The fertility program is not as easy as it normally is for us. When everything's done in the fall, and hey, you may have even gotten some of the P and K taken care of. We like to get a lot of the P and K done with our strip till in the fall. Well, then we get to spring. All we got to do is plant. Well, that's pretty easy. Or maybe we're going to put some nitrogen out with a pre-emerge herbicide or something like that. But yeah, in 2018, it's going to get a little more complicated, but we still get back to looking at that soil test, looking for where our best return on investment is going to be. And I mentioned already, we're talking fertility today, but we felt like our best return on investment was improving drainage. And if we improve the drainage enough that our root system can get down deep and we can keep that water table under control, that's going to be a good play. And then after that, we're looking at, well, what's our next limiting factor? The other thing that we were addressing this fall was pH, and we'll talk about that a little bit more as we get going on our show today. We're broadcasting live from the Morton studio, and our phone lines are open all throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success, like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
No two seasons are the same, so you need your crops to rise ready for whatever's in store. Now, there's one simple decision that provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio offers protection against disease, insects, nematodes, and even moisture or nutrient stress. In the fight against the unpredictable, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio. Today we're talking about your fertility program, and one of the reasons you want to dial it in just right is so you have more bushels to play with. And that's really what we can control as farmers, is let's produce the bushels and then let's try to do a good job managing them with marketing. We started Grain PhD to help you do that, and we've got Scott Harms with Grain PhD with us right now. Scott, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Good afternoon.
All right. So tomorrow morning, the USDA will release a supply and demand report. And because the USDA doesn't update the U.S. production figures in December, it's normally not a big report. But do you see anything different for tomorrow?
No, not really. As you say, you know, we're not going to get updates on yield or production for the U.S. corn crop or bean crops. They will change the global numbers a little bit. Any of the changes are going to have in those areas as far as U.S. production is going to happen in the final production number when it comes out in January. So tomorrow is just an update of the balance sheet figures in corn. The USDA could cut the ethanol usage a little bit, but we've had a real nice trend here recently in exports, so I would expect that the export number will be left unchanged. So probably not a big change, just manipulating numbers a little bit. But the corn market might find a little bit of positive support from the fact that the report's going to emphasize that we're going to have the tightest stocks-to-use ratio in a few years now. So that could be underpinned some support for the corn market. For soybeans, the USDA, they're justified in slashing the export figure based on the current pace of exports. But with the recent developments that we've seen in the Chinese trade front, we'd look for them to leave things alone tomorrow and see how things develop as far as exports moving forward. Overall, there's not going to be much in the way of any price-driving news tomorrow, I wouldn't suspect. The market's attention is going to continue to focus on these trade relations with China and hopefully get some export business that was expected following the G20 meeting.
All right, so we're nearing the end of the year here. We got about 3 weeks left in 2018. And throughout the season, we've been talking a lot about how farmers need to develop a plan for making pricing decisions, and sooner than later is always the right move. You've done some research regarding price action as we flip the calendar into 2019. Just wondering, could you share some of what you found?
Yeah, I wanted to take a look at the numbers, and we've always talked about when we develop a marketing strategy, it's important to know what the market's capable of achieving so you know where to set your targets when it comes to your expectations. So I went over the last 5 years in both corn and soybeans and tried to determine what we might expect in the first 5 months of 2019. In the corn market, we've had an average rally off the November-December lows of around 10% prior to June 1st. So translating that to the December 19 corn contract, which is currently trading, I think, around 405 right now, that would translate to a futures move towards 430. For soybeans, there was an average gain of 14% before June 1st, and based off the November 19 futures, that would translate to a move to 1024, and I think we're currently trading around 960 or 957 here today. So when we look back at history, we know that a lot of times highs are made in June and July. That's when the peak of any kind of production concerns might pop up. But we've also, if you go back, we've looked at the last 20 years. I think it's been 6 years in corn and 5 years in beans that we've made our highs in that March to May time frame. So I think what it does, and it kind of proved my point, that we really need to put an emphasis on doing some early season marketing, get things going early in 2019. It really takes the pressure off decisions down the road.
All right, so you've got this information, and we're looking for rallies in corn and soybeans and certainly hoping for that as a farmer here who has a little bit of grain to sell yet. So with this information, how do you move forward in developing an early season marketing strategy? Do you take, if you said a quarter of the time you see a high in March as opposed to June, do you try and market a quarter of the crop by March?
Yeah, we typically like to get people to be 35%, a target of at least 35% priced by the time the planters are done rolling. So focus on that first 5 months of the year, and we'll go beyond that if price opportunity presents itself. We may be a little bit under that if the price opportunity doesn't exist. We'll hold off, but we have to do something in that first quarter. It really does take the pressure off. Every year is going to be a little different. You look at the big picture in corn and soybeans, corn has its tightest stocks-to-use ratio it's had in years. So history can be a pretty good guide for us as far as determining where to put those sell orders. And so I think we would look at the historical numbers and say 425 to 430 would be the top end of value going into the spring. So we would use scale-up orders leading up to that. And in the soybeans, you know, we've got a more burdensome balance sheet there, so we really can't look at history and say, you know, we've got almost a 900 million or almost a billion bushel carryover in beans expected. So we can, really can't go, can't expect us to go back up to the historical averages. So we would use, instead of 1024, which is the average retracement to the upside, we would maybe look at $10 being the upper end of value, and we use scale-up orders going into that. So when I say 35%, you take a conservative yield estimate from the previous years, apply 35%, and you know exactly the bushels that you want to get priced, and use the product that you're most comfortable with, whether it's in the cash market. You know, we do a lot, we do grain and PhD, we work with futures and options. So if you're in that field, then you can use futures and options, provides greater flexibility. But a little bit of planning now can really pay off down the road, you know, both from an emotion standpoint and not being coerced into making bad decisions if the market starts to slip.
You know, that's one thing, too, you mentioned there, Scott. You said we utilize the cash market, not just the futures and options and these kinds of things. And a lot of farmers that I've talked to, I ask, hey, are you working with Grain PhD now? And the guys that say, well, no, I'm not, because isn't that just futures and options? Well, no, it's a whole program. And whatever the best tools are that you're most comfortable with and can help your farm make the most money, that's the kind of recommendation you get. And it doesn't cost anything to learn more about it. I don't know why everybody wouldn't jump all over that. And, you know, there's a lot of farmers that are just reluctant to do early pricing. Like you had just talked about, hey, it's a good idea to get a position established and take some of the risk out of this. But there's so many uncertainties this year with cost of inputs and guys switching acreage around and just a number of things. I'm sure you hear this all the time, Scott. What do you tell farmers in an uncertain year like 2019?
Well, you know, I might ask, you know, the farmers, you know, what decisions do you make in your normal course, any major decision that's involved in your farming operation, that you do have 100% clarity? You really don't. You know, there's always going to be a calculated risk in making decisions with unknown still in play. That's why we start with a conservative yield estimate. That's why we start with, you know, getting to 35%. You're always going to have more to sell down the road. And grain marketing is no different as far as that unknown. It's something we just have to deal with. But you have to maneuver through that and at least get something in place, because, again, it makes decisions down the road, you know, easier to make. If the market rises, you've got more to sell. If the market slides into spring and early summer, you're not going to feel the pressure to sell into a declining market if you've already got some sales on the book. So markets and marketing plans, they're fluid products. They're going to be changing as the fundamentals change in the market, as weather changes, and you're going to have to adapt to those changes. And those, you know, changes to any plan are going to be reviewed and adjusted as those conditions change. So we just feel it's important to get started, get something going on the books, take the pressure off down the road. With early sales on the books, you can always make changes down the road by re-owning them or, you know, offsetting them at some point. But, you know, if you've got some sales on the books, you're making those changes and those adjustments from a position of power instead of a position of weakness where you have nothing on, you feel forced to do something.
Well, certainly a lot to learn about grain marketing. And I know if you're saying, man, I'm just not as sharp on this as I should be, it's exactly why we started Grain PhD, to give you some free information so you can get more educated on this topic and make good decisions. And we've also got access to great advisors through Grain PhD, like Scott Harms that we've just been talking to here, where you can talk to one of these ag risk specialists and help set up a program for your farm. And then we've also got a tool, the GrainBridge software tool, that you can access and you can have a copy for free, and you can manage your grain marketing decisions and your books on your farm so you know right where you're at all the time. It's really useful, and again, it costs you nothing. Scott, thank you so much. We really appreciate all the information today.
All right, no problem.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're going to get back into talking about your fertility program and some decisions that you've got to make coming up for this spring. We'll be right back after this.
If If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
White mold, sudden death syndrome, root rot. If you raise soybeans, it may seem like you have all the cards stacked against you when it comes to disease. But did you know there is a new cost-effective seed treatment which can help prevent all three? Heads Up Seed Treatment offers a new proactive approach for dealing with fungal and bacterial diseases. Compatible with other seed treatments, hedge your bet against disease this spring. Ask your dealer for Heads Up today. To locate a dealer, visit headsupst.com.
Avoid dry run failures with the new Hypro Force Field Pump. Providing the ultimate protection, this wet seal pump will save you on costly in-season downtime to keep your sprayer running. Now all you have to worry about is the weather. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic is proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
Talking about your fertility program on today's Ag PhD radio program. And of course, we're talking about crop fertility here. And it could be a little bit of a challenge this year. A lot of that fall work didn't get done. I know on our farm, that's sure the case. We didn't get our seed bed prep work done. We normally like to get our strip tillage done. And we have to do a little conventional tillage where we're putting on some manure and that kind of thing. So we're going to have to do some work in the spring. So I think I got another guy here that's in the same boat. We got Ty Fickenscher on. He's with Luma down in Nebraska, and he's an equipment specialist. Ty, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Well, I would be doing much better if all my seed bed prep work was done. And I'm here with our Ag PhD research lead, Glenn Herz. And we were talking about this. How are we going to do stuff in the spring? And I'm wondering, what's your area like? Did a lot of guys get their work done in the fall, or are they going to be doing a lot of spring work?
No, definitely in the same boat. There's going to be a lot of spring work that'll have to be done. I know for us, we only got about probably 15 to 20% of what we were supposed to do in the fall actually done in the fall. So that's pretty common in this area. We're fortunate enough to get through most of harvest, but yeah, the field work is going to have to wait till the snow melts.
All right. So Glenn's normally our guy that's setting up our strip till rig and making sure everything's just perfect. Glenn, what do you got for questions?
Well, I think the biggest thing that I would ask right now is, are you as afraid of probably the same thing that I am here? The guys are probably going to start up too early because we are behind the eight ball.
Yeah, I think that might be a reality. I know we had one of our neighbors here late in the fall. They said they admitted that a field was done when it should not have been done. And I think we're going to be pushing the envelope here in the spring to get in and get things done, maybe when conditions are not as ideal.
Yeah, I agree. It's just going to be one of those years. And you know, when we're doing things, it's going to be, we're normally using a shank to put some fertility down deep, but we're going to switch to coulters for the spring. What should you look for to make sure you're doing a good job?
You know, when you're running the shank, one of the main things we find, we've actually got a 16-year-old soil ward and another machine that's a shank machine as well. And we run the end row unit, which has the shank. We just want to make sure we're not leaving, you know, a void down at the end of that knife. And we're actually going to do the same thing. Last spring, we took the shank off, did quite a few acres without the shank, just ran the coulter. And I know if one of our customers, he said it just made it a garden when he went in and plant last spring. But really, if a guy insists on using a shank, whether it's break up a hard pin or apply fertility down deep, you know, the main thing is making sure that slot that could be left by the shank is not there, is sealed up, so there's no slot for that seed to fall down, you know, below the ideal planting depth.
Say, Ty, do you guys have, do you work down there as well where you're just using wavy coulters, or are you, I mean, when you're talking, are you talking using the cog in the spring, or what do you guys use?
Yeah, like with that in row unit, that's meant to have the shank on it. And so when we pull that shank off, that just has the 22-inch 13-wave coulter leading. And there's some other configurations available as far as a a three coulter system as well. But yeah, as far as with our machine, when we pull that shank off, we're just running a single wavy coulter in front.
Right. No, that, and that's something that we found here too at the farm. I mean, it really works nice. It kind of makes a nice seed bed prep, coming back a day or two behind that.
Well, and it seems like with that wavy coulter too, we don't have nearly the issue of slicing as we would if it had a smooth coulter.
Right.
In fact, with that other machine, we switched it from a smooth coulter to a wavy coulter and really made a tremendous difference. So, we've been talking a lot to guys about, you know, how they can modify what they have to kind of reduce the amount of slabbing or sealing they get with the, you know, with the smooth coulter.
Yeah, there are just so many different things going into the spring. And, you know, as guys are running through with conventional tillage, I've heard a lot of different strategies for that, especially for the guys like you're in Nebraska. You got a lot of corn stalks to deal with. What are you talking about with farmers who are doing conventional till? What should they be looking at?
Well, as far as conventional till, we have less and less of that in this area. Right around here, we had a big switch, you know, probably 10 or 15 years ago to no-till. And now we've got strip till kind of making its way into the area pretty big. Quite a few guys switching over to strip till. But again, just like you said, that residue is the issue. You know, I have a number of guys looking at how they can do more shredding with the heads. You know, I've had a couple conversations with even baling, baling some residue. One of our customers, he actually baled some of the residue and left probably half to two-thirds of the residue still out on the field. But, you know, we're pushing yield environments to that 250 to 280 bushel an acre range. You know, these hybrids, modern hybrids, seem to be, you know, a lot more leafy, and leaving a lot more residue out there for us to try and figure out how to manage going into the next crop season.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And you know, we're in this situation too on our farm. We're talking about continuous corn on some of this ground, and not getting everything straightened up in the fall really makes me nervous. And we're probably going to plant some soybeans first. Do you have some guys doing that as well in your area?
Yeah, there was a couple of our neighbors this last year did that actually, and I guess I can't speak to how good of a yield response it was, but I know that they did not have yield loss from doing that. But
no, nobody wants to talk about that. That's the thing, Ty. It's how did that turn out for you? Oh, I don't know. But they're doing it again, so that tells me that it must have worked.
Yeah, when you see the guy out there 2 years in a row doing the same thing, it kind of implies something there, right?
Yeah, I think it's funny. Now, my brother can't keep his mouth shut, so if it were to work for him, he would have told everybody immediately, and I guess I'm probably a little guilty of that too, just because, I don't know, it's we don't want to keep it to ourselves, but we see a lot of guys that, I'll just keep that under my hat for a little while until everybody else figures this out. Is that kind of what you're seeing with the strip till too? Or are the guys out bragging about what they're doing, or are guys kind of, no, that's okay, I'll just keep it quiet for a while?
Well, I think more than anything, my experience has been is when the neighbors see how quick the crop came up, how good the crop looks early in the season, you know, how well it stands late in the season. I don't think there needs to be any words spoken between neighbors to understand what it's doing in the field. And I think that's what's kind of led to rapid adoption of strip till in this area.
Yeah, it's been a good deal on our farm too. Our challenge is just getting it done when we get a fall like last year. But going into the spring, we're just going to make some adjustments to the machine and try to make that work the best we can. And the challenge is kind of what Glenn hit on right off the bat, is how do we keep, especially my brother, out of the field, because he's the one that's like, oh man, Darren, we got to go, and it's tough.
If I may, am I allowed to ask questions back?
Yeah, absolutely, go for it.
Okay. So, again, with the shank setup, what's been your experience in the spring? Is it really doing the job it's supposed to as far as breaking hard pan, or can we pull that thing off?
That's funny, Ty. That's exactly where, until you cut in there, that's what I was going to ask you. You had, I'm not really a fan of the shank in the spring because of exactly what you said, where you leave that void in there. Because I want my seat placement to be the same all the way across. And if I got a spot where I've got that void in there and all of a sudden my seed drops down, you know, even if I've got hydraulic downforce or hydraulic lift or whatnot, it just simply isn't reacting quick enough. You're still going to have those gaps in there, and now I've compromised my seed depth.
Yeah, unless that soil is absolutely perfect all the way down, I think shanks are for fall. I think coulters are for spring in my mind. And the other thing is, just if you're doing it with coulters, I think it takes away, like if you're doing a fall placement of P&K and you're going to put it in a single band, we've done that successfully in our farm. As long as we've got RTK guidance, as long as we've got relatively straight fields where we feel like we can be right over that band. But a lot of guys don't. And I love what you're doing with the Soil Warrior machine, and you're mixing it all through the zone. Now it gives you so much more margin of error. And if we're going to have issues with field conditions and maybe the fields just aren't all perfect and square and neat, you got some curves and you got some hills to deal with, now you've got a nice window where you can place that seed, have plenty of fertility around it, and be successful. Hey, Ty, we got to let you run. We've been talking with Ty Fickenshire down in Nebraska. He's an equipment expert at LUMA. Ty, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate the time.
Talking about your fertility program on today's show, and of course the best way to do that is if you give us a call at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'd love to talk it through with you. If not, just keep on enjoying listening, and we'll be right back after this.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast, but hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrion herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a Soil Warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
Bean growers continue to see yield loss from white mold across the Midwest this season. To maximize next year's crop, a white mold prevention strategy that includes Contans WG soil fungicide is a must for your farming operation. Applying Contans this fall to reduce the sclerotia in the soil is the most effective way to stop white mold at its source. Go to whitemoldcontrol.com to learn more about the Contans No Risk Guarantee. Start a Contans white mold control strategy this fall or pay for it later in lost yield.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to growsmartrewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting from the Morton studio today, and we're talking about setting up your fertility program, which is a little bit more of a challenge this year than most years going into 2019. Assuming that conditions aren't going to greatly improve by spring, it's going to be kind of wet for a lot of growers, and that may change how you can get things done. Got Richard on with us right now. He farms down in Nebraska. Richard, how are you doing today?
Pretty good.
All right, so looking at your soil tests, what are you concerned about? What questions have you got going into this year?
Well, look at the micros. The copper is all running between 0.7 and 0.9.
Okay.
Manganese is running between, say, 2.6 and 10. And boron is 0.2 or 3.
Okay. What's zinc, just out of curiosity?
What's that again?
What's your zinc running at?
Zinc is running 1 to 1.6.
1 to 1.6. And your and just to get a complete picture here, have you got iron on there as well?
Iron is 37 to 125.
Okay. Okay, well, that's good. I like that's got some pop to it. We'd like to see that iron at least 20 to 40, and it sounds like we're good on that all the way through. So there we go. We got one that I would say, hey, we're in great shape there. We don't have to worry about that one. So that's a good way to start.
Okay. Not about the other one.
Now the bad news. Well, you know, here's the thing. I'm just assuming you've got N, P, and K all straightened out. And my other question that comes into before I talk micros is, what's your pH? Is your pH level kind of moderated, or are you fighting some extremes?
It's a little low, anywhere from 5.6 to 6.4.
Okay. So not too bad. But that 5.6 we do need to bring up. Are you planning on liming that?
Yep.
Excellent. And then if you do lime, or if you've already got some put out, get a complete analysis on that. I was amazed on our lime tests. We were getting a water treatment plant lime, and there was a lot of micronutrient in that. So we were getting, like for us, we get a lot of iron in our lime, but there are some other micros as well that you may be getting, you know, several pounds per acre when you put that lime out. So you want to make sure you check that.
Well, we were figuring on using Pell lime.
Okay. Well, then you aren't going to probably have that to deal with, but I think the lime's a good deal on that 5.6, and I'd try to shoot to get up in that 6.2 range, and if you're up in that 6.2 to 6.4, that's about ideal, I would say. What would you say,
Glenn? I would agree, yep.
So once you get there, you'll start to see some of those micros come a little more available, so you may have a little better levels than what you're actually looking at there, which would be really good. For us, our manganese got better the lower our pH got. So I don't think that one's going to change much, but you may see a little bit more on some of the others. So for me, I'm looking at what the budget is, what are you going to do? Because I want to build up, you know, the copper, manganese, boron, and zinc on your soil test.
Okay, now like for copper, how much would you recommend?
Well, I'd like to get to at least 1.4 parts per million. So let's just say on average you're at a 0.8. Well, that's 0.6 parts per million on a 6-inch soil test times 2 is 1.2 pounds that we need to have of actual copper. And if you're using a, what do you use, Glenn, a 35% or?
No, it's more, I think the one that we're using is only a 12%.
Okay, so if you've got a, just.
Don't you guys have a 25%? Copper sulfate?
Yeah,
there is a I believe so.
Okay, so let's just say you're using the 25%, then you need about 5 pounds per acre. Well, right. How are you going to do that accurately? That's the question. If you can mix it in a liquid situation so you can spray it.
There's water, dispersible powder that you can use as well.
So. Now, you may go higher than just the 1.4. I mean, you may go up to a 2 because kind of what we're shooting for is in that 1.4 to 2 range. So if you went as high as 2, then you've got, maybe 10 pounds of product to work with. And I don't know how accurately you can spread 5 or 10 pounds.
Well, another thing he could do here too, Darren, because he is low on a, if he can find a micro blend, that would probably be one option, a dry micro blend. That way you'll get a few more actual pounds out there to spread. We've done it before where we've done, say, a zinc sulfate, copper, manganese. It's not ideal. Just going to say that up front, but you can blend those because the densities are about the same. So if there is a way that you can blend those and get a pretty evenly dispersed, that's a way that you can do it as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I got the operator here, and he said they can spread 10 pounds.
Okay.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. If you wanted to do that and just do a single micro, you sure could, but you've got others that you want to deal with too. The boron.
The problem with those blends is you're getting such a small percent of each.
Absolutely.
It's got like 2% copper instead of 25%.
Yep, absolutely.
We've faced the same challenge here, and we've done some of that. We've done some of those blends where we've got as high a concentration as we could get, and we just spread a bunch out. And in a situation where really all of those nutrients could boost all of them, and that would be just fine, then we'd say, all right, which is the one that we're going to get up to kind of the maximum on first, and we'll go that far, and then we'll start addressing individual micros after. So for us with copper, we'd like to get it up to that 1.4 parts per million to 2, somewhere in that range. With manganese, we'd like to get it up in that 20 to 40 range. With boron, we'd like to get in the 1.2 parts per million to 3 range. And with the zinc, we'd like to get at least 1.8 parts per million. And then the other thing we'd look at is phosphorus. If we've got a phosphorus level, let's just say that it's at 20, well, we want to be at least a 10 to 1 with zinc. So we'd want to be at least 2 parts per million if your phosphorus that's available was 20.
Well, phosphorus sitting anywhere, well, we're averaging 51.
Okay, yeah. So we'd probably, if it was our farm, We'd be going up to a 5 part per million zinc. What? Right. How about, Glenn, you work with a lot of real high-yielding growers around the country. What are they doing?
What's right. That, I mean, that's a big thing. I mean, that phosphorus number being high like that and your micros being low, especially your zinc, it's very possible that the phosphorus is tying some of these up as well. We've got to get that zinc up there a little bit. That zinc is probably the one, depending on the crop that I'm putting in, but I would say zinc is going to be the first one that I'm looking at, simply because, I mean, I always think of zinc as candy for the rest of the micros. If you get the zinc in there, that actually helps bring forward those other micros as you're, getting those available as well. So,
mm-hmm. Have you guys ever heard of lignin sulfate?
I have not.
Never worked with it.
Never worked with it? Okay. So.
Okay, can I ask too what your boron at 0.2?
See,
to
here
0.3.
You go, Richard. Now we got Glenn started off. Uh-oh. Now he's gonna just give you a barrage of questions here coming back.
Here's something I was gonna do, and we've done it before a little bit. Is I'm on a 2x2 with my starter program.
Awesome. Sure.
Was to throw a quart of boron and a quart of zinc in with the starter.
Okay, just. The boron at a quart, I think you'd be just fine. We've got guys that'll put out even a little bit more because you are in that 2x2 scenario. The zinc in a 2x2, I have no problem with that whatsoever. It's just that when we put those in, they're a little more cost prohibitive. I mean, they're a little bit higher. The thing that is good about them is they are readily available. Boron is going to be one. Sorry?
But that and the plant can get at them easier, per se, rather than the broadcast.
Yep, absolutely. Do you guys do, are you putting boron in when you're doing your herbicide passes or any of that kind of stuff?
I never have. I didn't know if that, like you just said, it's a very expensive way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to more like feed the soil to feed the plant.
Yep.
Thinking.
Yep.
Yeah, with the boron, that's one that boron and sulfur and nitrogen are all leachable ones. They all move around a little bit. And we've been doing more of that kind of work just because we can use low rates of boron then and feel like we're getting it spread really well. It's one that if anything happens, I know if you're using a dry blend, which you're not talking about here, but if you're using a dry blend, that always scares me a little bit with boron because it can settle out in some of those blends. Hey, Richard, did you have more questions for us? We're kind of up against a break here.
No, I appreciate your time.
Oh, you bet. Thank you so much. Good luck going into this spring. We're talking about your fertility plans, but we're also taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
In 1949, Morton Buildings constructed our first machine storage building to establish our bond with the farming community. Since then, our relationship has grown, and so have our product offerings. From the smallest specialized operation to the largest agricultural enterprise, we understand the needs of your business and continue to evolve to meet industry demands. Plus, when you build a Morton building, you're backed by the strongest warranty in the business. To learn more about the Morton Advantage, visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
It's tough to keep your stored soybeans in perfect condition. To maintain beans at 13% moisture, you need to run your bin fans when outside air humidity is at 70%. For 12% moisture, you need to run at 65%. For 11, 60. How can you possibly get the timing right yourself if you don't know the humidity at your bin site and aren't there to switch on your fans? The Steps GMS Temperature Humidity Switch is your low-cost solution. For more information, visit us at stepsgms.com.
When looking for someone to help with your risk management, a key component to look for is patience. Patience to bring you along in the process at your own speed. Patience to learn about your operation, and patience to not only discuss what strategies may be effective for your plan, but why they would be effective. That's the strength of Grain PhD. I'm Darren Hefty. When you're ready to become more engaged in your risk management, Grain PhD can assist you with that process. Visit grainphd.com to learn more.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We are taking your calls and questions throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. And we're just talking with Richard down in Nebraska. And I think it's important as you start looking through your soil tests, just start at the top. And we like to look at soil pH first. And I get it that soil pH isn't everything. But on our farm and a lot of others, we have seen when that pH gets way out of whack, that it ties up nutrients and some just aren't as available. And when we get our pH lined up, then things work. Like, for example, Glenn, you did a little bit of work with Dave Hula on our farm, and he had a pH that was just too high for his liking, and he just wanted to show what he could do. You want to talk about that in just a minute?
Well, we've been doing the high yield plots. I think this will be our fourth year now, or first step plots, we call them. And our soil pHs are high. I mean, they're 7 to 7.6. Well, they used to be. We're starting to bring them down with some of the things that we're starting to do now. But in the area where we have irrigation, that's kind of new ground. We put the Morton Center in there, so we had to move some dirt around and what sort those sorts of things. But he was just kind of tired. He's like, we keep doing the same thing here. We're not getting, we don't see a response, with some of the foliar action that we do in the summer season.
Trying to throw micronutrients in there because we just couldn't get them in the plant.
Right. And we've tried, we've done some AMS type things and that's worked very well, but he says, we're really going to throw the kitchen sink at it here. So we put 1,000 pounds of elemental sulfur with nothing more than, let's see how fast we can drive this pH down. And we applied it would have been November of 2017, end of November 2017. And lo and behold, by July of 2018, we pulled the soil sample prior to field day just so that we could have some info for the guys when they came just to see what we were doing. We were down to a 5.1. Now, I saw the sample come back and I just chuckled a little bit. So I called David right away and says, man, we did something here, but we probably went too far. Well, because of all the organic acids that the plant is releasing at that time, he says, Glenn, we're just fine. He says, that'll come back up in the fall. And it has now. We're still, I think the last time we took the test here, I think it came back either like a 5.6 or a 5.7. So we may have to put some lime on. We understand that. I mean, we're talking a very small plot here. But it just goes to show.
Plus it's on Brian's ground, Glenn, so yeah. Brian can pay for that lime.
That's right.
he has that coming because he's done that to me too.
That's right. But it just goes to show, guys are resigned to the fact that we can't do anything out there with the soil conditions that we've got. One thing, we've got drainage underneath there, so that helps. I think to just say, well, I'm just going to go out and make this happen. Well, you can do some things, but drainage is one thing. You got to get things to be able to flush out of the soil. So if we've got an area where there's constantly standing water in there, that's not going to help anything.
No, it's not going to work. We start there with soil pH, and like what you were talking about in that small plot is what we see a lot of really successful growers do. They're willing to overdo things. And I like how Kip Cullors talks about this. He said, you have to be willing to go off the edge of the cliff just on a small scale on your farm to know where the edge of the cliff is. And that's exactly what you were doing there we're desperate. We've been trying different things and kind of going about it a little of this and a little of that. And David was just tired of it. He's like, no, we're just going to figure this thing out right now. And so now I figured out, 1,000 pounds is too much.
Right.
So that's cool. And that was on one little spot on the farm. So now he knows, maybe 700 pounds would be the right amount. And let's do that on more acres and find out if that works. And then if that works, great. And if it's still too much, we'll cut back on the rest of the farm. And so by doing that, you learn some of those lessons. And I think as you go into next year, if you've got soil tests done, which I know is a challenge to get done this fall, you've got some data to go on. If you don't, if you can get soil tests done in the spring, that would be great. I know there's some firms that would still do it even in the winter. It's definitely more work and not pleasant, but it could be done. And depending on where you're at in the country, you may have time to get that done yet. But then just look through that complete soil test. Make sure you're getting a complete analysis. We were just talking again with Richard, and he's got all these different micronutrient levels, and he's kind of got N, P, and K where he wants for the most part, and he wants to start addressing the micros. Hey, that's great. If you don't even have those on your test, you just don't know where to begin. All right, going into next spring again with your fertility program, it may change just because of where we're at with field prep and seed bed prep and those kinds of things, you may have some different options available to you in the spring. So make sure you're getting prepared for that. If that means some modifications to equipment to do a little more with the planter, or if that means modifying your tillage tool or your strip tillage tool, get it done. You got some time now between now and spring, and be set up so you're ready to be successful. I want to get to some of the questions in the Ag PhD mailbag next.
It's the mailbag!
Hey, had one come in on social media here on Twitter, and they said, hey, could you ask Glenn what he has seen really good luck with the last few years in his trial work? Is it foliar applications? Is it seed treatments? What does he really like? All right, Glenn, what do you like? What's been working for you? Where have you seen some areas or different types of treatments that have worked for you?
Well, I think a lot of us are starting to talk a little bit more about the humic and fulvic component of things. Just finding something that helps pull these nutrients in, that's probably the biggest thing. I mean, that's probably for me the number one thing. I've used those, you know, the humic acid, fulvic acids type things, adding sulfur to a, say, a side dress type application with the nitrogen. That's been big for us. Seed treatments wise, yes, there's a big difference out there with seed treatments. We've really liked some of the seed treatments that we've got on the corn and that sort of thing. That seems to be very good. I've kind of shied away a little bit from some foliar treatments. I'm more feed the root rather than feed the plant type of thing. So I like to find things that I can put on early in the season that seem to help, you know, build that root mass.
Got a kind of a question along those same lines. What's it like working with guys like the state record growers and even world record growers that you get to work with for the Ag PhD Field Day?
It's awesome.
Glenn's just smiling over here.
When we started this about 4 years ago, it was kind of intimidating because you want to do a good job, and it still is a very intimidating type scenario. But they're fantastic guys to work with. That's probably the biggest thing. And then they want to learn right along with me. I think the thing that's kind of interesting is they'll ask me what this grower is doing, and, you know, the guy that they're competing against or something like that. And they're really not competing. Everybody's just trying to learn, how do we get more bushels off of the same acre? But it's been fantastic. I mean, a lot of relationships that I never would have got a chance to work with these guys. You know, you wouldn't know about this if we didn't have the avenue that we've got with the field day and everything. So it's been the whole thing has been just outstanding. Look forward to each year to see what different things are we going to try that maybe did work last year. How can we expand on them? What didn't work? You know, it's like I'm really excited to see what we can find on David's plot from last year. You know,
yeah, now what that are we the lingering effects.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, the biggest thing I think that I'm excited about with that, Darren, is we went from a 7.6 to a 5.1. Now it's a 5.6 pH in there or whatever. We didn't do any tillage in there. Okay, how long is that going to stay there? There's a lot of guys that ask me that. Well, you got the pH to come down, but how long is it going to last? Well, we don't know that. But, man, if we can make that a long-term thing, now you've basically got information that you can share with every other grower that's out there.
Yeah, it is really cool. We had another question come in. Ask Glenn how he gets crops like cotton and peanuts to grow way up north where you guys farm.
Yeah. Biggest cotton grower in South Dakota right now, but didn't turn out very good. This year got in too late.
No, we didn't get to harvest, but it was kind of fun. It is fun to see all those different crops up here, and it certainly does bring some different challenges growing them way out of their environment, no doubt about that. Hey, real happy to have Glenn Herz, our Ag PhD research lead, with us. Thanks so much, Glenn, for joining me on the show today. And thanks to you for listening. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now, stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.